want to know how to find it. Seek it out when they hide it. You know it's in the bag when it's an easy grab. But come on, take a chance now. So go, 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 geocache, geocache. And if you need help, we're right there in a flash. If you got a question, just call in and ask. Uncover the stash on the Geocaching Podcast. The Geocaching Podcast.
Welcome to episode 194 of the Geocaching Podcast, recorded live on March 2nd, 2011. I'm your host, XFunkX, with
Daryl WB4.
If you want to participate in our show today, please call 724-444-7444, and our TalkCast ID is 7525. You can also join our live chat room to participate with other listeners, and that can be found at geocachingpodcast.com/live. Click the Join Now button to participate. We have a voicemail line, and that number is 206-3503-GPS. And we're on Twitter at twitter.com/GC Podcast. This episode is sponsored by listeners like you. Thank you. Welcome back, Montu. Daryl, Montu's not on the line tonight. I'm just so used to starting with Montu. Welcome back, Daryl.
Yeah, he's unfortunately taking care of some health issues again. And I think he's actually scheduled to be back next week.
Yeah, I think he is. And, you know, but Montu, we hope you're feeling better here than the next couple of weeks. Now, Daryl, how have you been? I heard that you had a pretty fun weekend last weekend.
Yeah, well, Saturday was cool because we did our first GC 101, and that was a huge success. People loved it. Unfortunately, we didn't get to do the video because we didn't get into the venue until about 20 minutes before. So it was that mad scramble to get this projector set up, the laptop set up, and everything else. But it went over very well. They loved it. It was great. And they're talking about doing another one. And we also got to grab three caches. So Saturday was cool.
Awesome. And, you know, I saw your slides for the show, and they looked amazing. Probably better than any other GC101 slides that I've ever seen before. And so I wish I could have been there with you guys.
Yeah, and I really wanted to put that together as a video so that people could get a feel for what we were doing and how we were putting it together. Because my whole thing in putting this together was it was going to be a crash course, no more than about 40, 45 minutes of classroom time. And then I wanted the students out there in the field finding some sample caches. And we did get a nano on the front door. We got a couple of, we got a rock cache, so small, and then a really small Tupperware container kind of thing. And then, you know, they found those quick and easy and went on to actually trying to hunt some real caches in the area. And the cool thing is, you know, this is all with the guidance of several geocachers. And the cool thing was they actually got to experience a DNF.
Oh, wow. That's cool.
That's something that's really a good educational experience, I think, for them. You know, don't spend too much time on the cache. Don't worry if you're not going to find it, because sometimes it just happens.
Yeah.
So they got that. They got to find a fence post cap. They got all kinds of experience all crammed into this one little short time period. You know, I want to say it was like less than an hour and a half in all.
It sounds like a lot of fun. You know, maybe sometime we'll get to see your presentation there. Maybe.
Yeah, well, we're talking about doing one spring, summer, and hopefully this time we'll have enough time to get in and set up the cameras, and we'll put up another one.
Awesome.
The news. Groundspeak Archive, the ET Highway Series on Tuesday, March 1st. According to the post from Miss Jen on GC2551A, the series was archived at the request of the Nevada Department of Transportation. The cache has been archived and locked, so no further logs are permitted. We'll have a link to the log by Miss Jen and our interview with the hiders just 2 weeks ago in our show notes, but now we have this audio from Clay for more on the situation.
Hello, this is Clay Four from Las Vegas, Nevada, co-owner with Gus White Wolf Den of the ET Power Trail. As you may or may not have heard, there are some new developments in our ET Highway Series. We stated on your show a few weeks ago that we thought we had everything under control and the trail was going to be able to stay intact. We had had contact with BLM, the Highway Patrol, county commissioners, NDOT, as well as Groundspeak and our local reviewer. The plan was to remove some caches in bad areas, relocate them to areas that were better, as well as relocate some caches that were on the freeway that were too close. We were planning on doing that this Sunday. On February 28th, this last Monday, I got a phone call from a supervisor at NDOT informing us that there was a close call with a geocacher vehicle and a snowplow. That night when I got home, I archived 28 caches that fell into that area that I felt was a problem and where the near miss was. Of course, planning on going out and removing them and replacing them this Sunday. March 1st, around 11 o'clock, we received an email from GroundSpeak saying that they were going to archive the caches. And I'll just read part of that email I got. "Hi, Clay and Gus. I'm afraid I have some bad news that will be disappointing to you. The Nevada Department of Transportation has deemed that the ET Highway series be immediately archived, and the Nevada Attorney General is involved." The rest of the email just basically told us how it was going to go about going archived, being archived. They were going to start on one end, had five or six reviewers, and we were going to start at the other end, meet in the middle. Contacted GroundSpeak on the phone several times since then. There doesn't seem to be any hard feelings on their part with the ET trail, as well as Gus and I. We understand that when we put the trail out, it was going to be controversial. We weren't even sure how long it was going to be able to last. We were just hoping it would last a while. It's lasted pretty, we were pretty happy with the length it's lasted. And we understand that when push comes to shove, they had to push the button and archive it. It was a safety concern. Whenever you get the attorney generals involved, I think it gets people's attention. We'd like to say that we're sorry for those who had plans to come out and visit our trail. Who had tickets. We wish we could have given them a better heads up about them being archived, but as soon as we found out, 20 minutes later, all 1,021 caches were archived, so we had no inkling that they were going to go down, but just that they were going to go down, and it was, we didn't even know it was going to happen that quick. We're directing everybody who has bought tickets or is wanting to visit the Power Trail to think about doing Route 66 Power Trail down in Barstow, California, just south of the I-40. That Power Trail, number one, is GC2J17A. There's about 800 caches along that Power Trail along Route 66. A few more accommodations than we had, gas and all that stuff. Hopefully that will suit everybody's needs. Unfortunately, there's nothing we can do. We're kind of at our its wits end there. If anybody would like to email us, we can answer any questions. However, you probably know about as much as we do. I just stated everything that I know about it. Or if you need, we've got some coins left. If anybody wants any coins, you can email us at our ET account, which is on any of our pages. At ET account is ethighway1000@gmail.com. That's ET highway spelled out, the number 1000@gmail.com. I'd like to thank everyone who's emailed with their condolences and support on behalf of Gus and I. We'd also like to thank the Geocaching Podcast for letting us update everyone on your show. Hope everybody has a good day. Take care.
Well, thanks, Clay, for calling that in. And again, that's too sad. We will be talking about that a little bit further. First, let's hear from the bad cop.
Geocaching question of the day. The bad cop asks, you answer.
Hello. This is the Bad Cop, and welcome to the geocaching question of the day. Each weekday, I ask a geocaching-related question to my Twitter audience, and then summarize the replies and post it on my website. I hope this little project will keep you up to date on the ever-changing face of geocaching. Fellow geocacher Jenny GR4 wants to know, which attributes do you use the most to filter your caches? 78% of the geocachers that replied said they don't use any attributes to filter their searches. So tell me, what attributes do you use to filter your searches? You want to find out all this and more? Come to my website, cachingnw.com, and follow me, the Bad Cop, on Twitter.
Listener feedback.
Hi, this is Dudley Grunt calling from Northern Virginia today. I wanted to let folks know about a new geocache that's been published to help Christchurch earthquake victims in New Zealand. It's listed on terracaching.com. It's called Christchurch Earthquake Relief by Soccer Fanatics. It's LC7T2. It's designed to encourage terracaching members to donate to the relief efforts of victims of last week's Christchurch earthquake. All you need to do to claim the location of cash is donate at least $5 U.S. or equivalent to your local organization supporting a relief effort. In addition, Terror Caching Management, Cache 108, the new head honcho over there, has pledged to donate an additional $5 for each of the first 100 finders on this locationless cache. So, as a caller, help spread the word, see if we can get the maximum out of this and get at least 100 people to log that cache. So anyone who's a Terror Caching member or who wants to sign up and maybe hasn't noticed this on their forums or seen it, go to terrorcaching.com and check it out. It's LC7P2. All right, thanks a lot, and bye.
Hey, guys, it's Tom Loves Bacon from Baltimore, and I just finished listening to episode 193, and I'm curious your thoughts. I have found 109 geocaches since September, all using my BlackBerry Tour, and I'm curious why there's no love for the BlackBerry. The only good application on the BlackBerry is the Trimble Geocache Navigator, which you can't use to find mystery or multi-caches on the fly. You have to manually input them. Plus, Gowalla was late to the game, and there still is no scavenger app. Just wanted to get your thoughts on that, and keep up the great podcast, and thanks. Have a great day.
Well, Daryl, there are a few apps for the BlackBerry for geocaching. I know that there is the Cache Sense. Tom, I don't know if you've tried the Cache Sense. That can be found at cachesense.com. Daryl, do you know of any other applications for the BlackBerry that can be used for geocaching?
Yeah, the Head Heart Hat did a review on one. I'm trying to remember the exact name, but I want to say it was Black Star. And also a word on the Cache Sense program. That actually used to be called CacheBerry, and it is a great app. A lot of people like that one. It's more of an offline app like the CGO or the Geosphere app is for iOS. So that's another great one to try. But you are not going to find the depth of the apps that you will find on some of the other devices, because the BlackBerry is not as modern a development environment as our iOS, Windows Phone 7, Android, and so much of the new stuff that we're seeing. And from all of the surveys and everything I've been seeing, the number of users on the BlackBerry has been dwindling. Their market share is slimming down a bit. It's mostly corporate users left on the platform, and a lot of the individuals have left, which would likely be the ones using the geocaching apps. So a whole bunch of different factors contributing to not much development on BlackBerries.
Well, and I also need to mention too that the Cache Sense isn't going to be quite as the same experience as you have with the Trimble Navigator, because they don't have a license for the API, and so you have to load your GPX in directly. You can't just open it up and everything is going to be there like it is with the Trimble Navigator. Now, tonight is our Cacher Coffee episode, which is kind of it's an open forum for anyone who wants to talk. So if you want to give us a call, 724-444-7444. Our TalkCast ID is 7525. Press the *8 key if I don't see you to get you unmuted, and we can go ahead and talk like that. Now, Daryl, let's talk about the ET Highway. It's a major thing just developed here. You know, like we mentioned it in the opening there. It's a good time to just bring it up. What are your thoughts on this? You know, I know in our chat room we've had people talk about, you know, is there going to be any repercussions for this as far as caching in general? And Clay is actually in our chat room today, and he did say that there is a repercussions, at least for Nevada, because they're looking at all caches along all roads. And that's going to be too bad, because, you know, there's a lot of caches that are good along the roads, and that'll be bad. And Head Hard Hat says, where does it stop from there? You know, or is all of the states going to go for this kind of a push and regulations there? It's just going to get snowballed.
Yeah, you know, this is another situation where, you know, a few bad apples spoil the fun for just about everyone. And this is why we have guardrails up at some of the beautiful natural sites now, too. You have a few people who aren't going to play by the rules, who aren't going to pay attention, and unfortunately they cause problems for everyone. But at the same time, you know, something like Power Trail does kind of encourage people to loosen their grip a little bit and want to take some extra freedom so they can get to the next one that much faster. So it is really important that when you go and do any kind of caching, you do try to stick to all of those rules, because we can see what happens when you don't.
Well, and but my wife also had mentioned too that, you know, especially in Nevada, there's a lot of places where there's not a curb to pull off of the road. You know, if you pull off the road, you're gonna go down a hill. And so I've never been to this ET trail, so I obviously don't have any idea if that's the case or not. But there may be places that they can't pull off. You know, I'm just playing advocate here, devil's advocate. You know, if they can't pull off there, I mean, granted, and maybe the caches shouldn't have been placed there if that's the case. But it sounds like even in that case, Clay and Gus were willing to change the way the cache was so that people could get off the road.
Yeah, and as I recall, there is a restriction in the guidelines. I'd have to go back and look at it, which unfortunately I hadn't done before the show started. But there is a restriction that you can't place caches near busy roads. So that's something that, as the cache owner, they should have taken into account. And you know, there's some argument that maybe this was, you know, in that range of it's a busy road, you shouldn't place caches there. You know, so there is a good argument there as well.
At the same time, though, isn't it, you know, partly the reviewer's fault too for reviewing caches that are too close to the road?
It could be, but they're not there. They're not checking it out, and they have to rely on the information that they're seeing, which isn't much.
That is true. I mean, I guess they don't know how busy the road is and things like that. Now, you know, it's just an interesting thing, you know. And Clay says here in the chat room too that there's, you know, hardly busy roads out there. One to two cars vary 2 to 3 hours. So, you know, it's just kind of varies on the time.
Yeah. And this is one of those situations that, you know, a few of them had run into problems. And again, because it's not that busy a road, some of the cashers probably thought, oh, you know, I can just, you know, pull over. I don't have to get all the way off the road because we haven't seen any cars.
Yeah, that's true. Now, if you guys want to put in your feedback on this topic for tonight's episode, 724-444-7444, and our podcast ID is 7525. And, you know, he did mention in his voicemail that, you know, that there was a close call with out there, and it's too bad that it had to be that close of a call. You know, and it's funny, all of the feedback that I've gotten once I posted on our Twitter account that and Facebook account that this happened. You know, I got a lot of range of stuff from people saying this, you know, we could see this coming, this is going to happen. You know, we knew that, to people that are sad about it. And, you know, I think that it's definitely too bad. And a lot, you know, I guess it also varies too, because, you know, some of those people are people that love numbers. Some of them are people that they don't like the numbers run. So it kind of varies like that. But Clay does say that sometimes when they were placing these things that they would go several hours, 2 to 3 hours, without even seeing any cars at all. So it is kind of interesting that the Nevada Department of Transportation thinks that this is, you know, if there's that little of cars, that this is that big of an issue. It'd be interesting, and I'd love it'd be great if we could actually get someone from the DOT on here. But you know, I would love to just talk and see kind of about what their rationale behind that is. I mean, obviously, if it was a close call, it was a close call, and you know, it's not worth taking someone's life over geocaching. So it's one of those things that if it has to be archived, it has to be archived. And it seems like, you know, no one, you know, Clay and Gus aren't taking this personally, though they know that it's going to happen. So it's one of those things that I guess, you know, like he said, it was a matter of time. I knew it would end sometime, but they didn't think it was going to be this soon.
Yeah, and we're not trying to pick on the ET highway by any stretch. This is going to happen with any type of cache where you have a whole bunch of them near roads, or you know, it could be near schools or whatever. And this has been a problem all along, is that cachers don't necessarily know what's going on around them. They're too involved with trying to find the cache to notice that there's someone in the window of the school watching them, who gets nervous. And, well, frankly, they probably shouldn't have to do that either. But you've got to take, with any of your hides, into consideration where that is and what people are going to think about it. This goes into the same thing with the caches that are detonated too, because someone spots them and doesn't know what's going on. There's no way to eliminate the risk with every cache completely, but as the hider, you have to take that into account, be aware of it. And as the finder, you have to be aware that, you know, you're out there doing something that most people don't understand. It is going to raise concern. And make sure that you're following all the rules. Get out of other people's way. You know, don't block the road no matter what you're doing.
Yeah, and you know, there's certain things that, yeah, you, like you said, be safe. There's certain things that we need to do. Pull all the way off the road. If you're near the road, take the time to get out there and just, you know, make sure that you're going to be safe. And I think, like you said, goes back to the basic just safety and common sense of geocachers too. You know, if you don't just, it is just a game. Don't put yourself at risk and don't put others at risk. You know, kind of don't be secretive if police ask you, things like that. You know, we've got to be aware of what we look like when we're doing this.
Oh, absolutely. It, you know, it's a game. There, no one needs to get hurt. No one should be getting hurt. And hopefully we can keep that up. But we have had a number of close calls. So something is obviously going on, and we probably need to be just a little bit more aware and a little bit more proactive about it than we have been.
Yeah. What are you guys' opinions? You know, we've seen lots of chatter about things in the chat room here. Again, 724-444-7444. And the TalkCast ID is 7525. Or if you're on the phone already, just go ahead and speak up. We've got everybody unmuted. So what are you guys' thoughts on this?
Hey, guys. Ed Hard Hat here. One of the things that I have seen in debate on Twitter over this is where people would like to have safe power trails. Now, one of the areas that they had talked about would be, like, say, on four-wheeler or RV trails, places that are out in the woods that are away from people. But again, I think you fall under the same idea of safety. You're going to have people riding bikes, taking four-wheelers, and a safety factor has to be put in place for that as well, so that not only the geocachers don't get hurt, but the other people enjoying the trails as well do not get hurt. It all takes common sense to do the right thing and, of course, getting permission to do it.
Yeah, absolutely. And the rail trails are great locations for power trails. We've seen a number of those, but you're not going to be able to do the same kind of numbers that you would on a road. And that's, you know, it's what it is. I happen to like that kind of power trail better for the most part because it's a more active, I get to do it. There are people, though, who can't go out and do that kind of caching. They can't, you know, move around necessarily as much. They can't get out of the car and spend as much time walking, something like that. So it's always a different situation for different cachers. But yeah, I love those power trails on rail trails.
I think it goes back to, you know, I think this is being handled in a very, very good way. I think that Clay and Gus are having a very good attitude out about it, probably better than I would have if I was in the situation. But I think that it all goes back to the, you know, let's have a positive attitude for geocaching. You know, let's not get, you know, we work so hard, you know, and as we've seen recently in Australia, you know, New South Wales just approved in their national parks that you can place geocaches. And that's great. You know, it's been a ban for them since 2002. And it's, you know, we work so hard as geocachers to make people aware and of the good and positive things. Let's not take this and make this bad. Let's not put it on the DOT team. You know, Clay said it seems like it may have even just been one of the DOT guys that didn't have a like for the trail to begin with that was pushing for this archiving. So, you know, let's not push back. I think, you know, it's one of those things that, you know, we need to, as geocachers, be always looking for positive and go ahead and put that out there and make sure we have good media and good press.
Well, in mentioning the New South Wales national parks, one of the things I like about those national parks in state parks and county parks and, you know, whatever kind of parks that are doing these permit systems is there is a clear and obvious trail in place that you have to go through to get caches approved, and everyone knows what those are and where they are. So that really does alleviate a lot of the problems if you have that permitting system. Yeah, it takes some extra time for everyone involved to go through it, but look at how much better that is because everyone who needs to know knows about it.
And the great thing about that with the state parks, especially over the past 2 years, there are whole states now that are getting involved with this. West Virginia, there's a whole thing in the Northeast with Maryland and several states up there. Nevada, there's been a bunch of them that are really opening up to geocaching as long as people follow the rules.
Oh, yeah, and I love when the park system gets involved, and you know they can actually start going and hiding these caches, and they'll go in and do hides that involve a lot more work than you or I could do just going into the park, because they know the terrain, they know what is there. You know, they're taking, in one case, we saw one where they just put a shelf under one of their docks. You know, we could go and do that if we really wanted to, but we couldn't necessarily get the permission. We couldn't, you know, get the approval, because these guys know what's going on. They can just say, oh, hey, this would be a really cool place to hide it. And we've seen all kinds of those kind of really cool hides. You know, there's some old man-made structure in the middle of the woods that they know about, and they're going to take us to because they know it's there, and we don't necessarily know it's there. There's no trails or anything leading to it. So, you know, I love when they get involved.
The great thing with that, too, is the parks, of course, are very considered, you know, want to make sure that the sensitive areas remain sensitive and that we don't go bushwhacking where we shouldn't go. But they also know the good spots where we can go. And what I've also heard from state parks is that they are actually hiring local geocachers to work with them to actually design the correct geocaches in the spots that they want to put them.
And that's awesome.
Oh, yeah, that's happened on a lot of them, and it's a really great way to partner, and it's good for everyone because we get to go and play the game, and the parks get more visitors.
Yep, absolutely.
Now, we want to hear you guys' thoughts on this. Obviously, we've got a lot of people that have commented on the Twitter and Facebook about this banning or archiving of these caches. So if you're not actually on the call with us tonight, give us a call. 206-350-3GPS and leave us a voicemail. Voice your opinion. We want to hear what you guys have to think about this. Now, Daryl, we did get one other request for to talk about a topic tonight, and GeoGeek on Twitter said that they have a topic to talk about tonight. Cache owners, they're wondering about cache owners specifying that people with lots of FTFs don't FTF their cache. Is this discrimination or not? I don't know. I think it's a For one, I don't like it, but I think it's a closed topic, because Groundspeak themselves says no additional logging requirements, and that's an additional logging requirement. That's an ALR right there. You know, if you want to make that type of a thing, make it a puzzle, I guess, but you know, you can't say that. You know, someone who has lots of FTFs can't find it, be first to find. I don't think that works. You know, it's a cache, it's an even playing field.
Yeah, well, I can understand what's going on here, because we did have, for a little while, about, I'd say 6, maybe 8 people in the area got all of the FTFs for Metro Detroit, and we all knew each other. It was a nice, friendly thing, and, you know, half the reason we were all doing it, and, you know, I was one of the people out there, not getting most of the FTFs, but, you know, getting out there for the FTF parties and really enjoying it. The problem is there's a lot of newer cachers who don't have the access, or a lot of cachers who don't have the resources to get the notifications. And so they were getting frustrated. They were getting turned off and had some hard feelings. So I can understand why the cache owner is saying, please, FTF hunters, don't go and do this one. You know, wait a couple of days. You know, because it does discourage people from finding the cache, even if, you know, they're not going to get an FTF.
Yeah, and I mean, but at the same time, who cares? Yeah, I mean, I like doing FTFs, and I like being first to find on that. You know, I have a handful of them here in our area, but at the same time, I guess it's the cache owner, but I guess so if someone has the tools that you don't, I mean, that's all about geocaching. I mean, that's why you make mystery puzzles, you know, because I may have tools to solve this puzzle or know the right tools to use on the internet to solve a puzzle. So if I've got the right tools as far as getting the notifications to my email or to my BlackBerry or to whatever first, I don't see how you can really say that that's not fair. I mean, there's a lot of things that I could say about that, but you know, I just don't think that it you shouldn't be able to say, no, you can't use this because, or you can't.
Well, here's the thing. It's only going to be a request. That's the bottom line. Yeah. You know, the cache owner can request that. They can't really, the way he phrased it, it sounds more like a demand. So if that's the case, then yeah, the cache owner is probably a little out of line, but he should just say, hey, we really have a whole lot of people in the area who would really like to get some FTS, first find hounds, take it easy for a day or so, let some of these people find it, and then please go and hunt it. But, let's leave it out there for a little while longer so that some of these people who haven't gotten FTF can actually claim an FTF. And this type of attitude has spawned some weird caches. Like we had everyone's an FTF cache, and the whole thing was it was a big long guardrail, and every time you put the cache back, you had to put it in a little different spot so that everyone had the experience of finding it for the first time, and everyone had to log it as a first to find. Well, yeah, it's an interesting idea. It did give people some experience with the beta quality of first to finds, but it was a little bit weird, especially when you had 150 logs on it that they were FTF.
Yeah, I understand that. And, it's actually in our chat room here. I believe that the person requesting is talking in our chat room. And they said, in this case, the cache owner made the request and then emailed abuse when he did find the FTF, when he did FTF it.
So, well, that's inappropriate no matter what. But, if it was a request, then, it as the cache finder, it's up to you as to whether you're going to heed that request or not. But I would, as a finder, as a courtesy to the owner, probably try to give them a day or so for other cashers to find it.
Well, and
I think a lot of times, especially the first to find rock hounds out there, I'm one of them. I had a first to find today. I don't even read that. All I see is I get the notice, I see where it's at, I'm gone. I don't even read the description by the time it's out there, because that's, you're going for that rush to find it. So I'm not sure how they could control something like that shy of an event.
Well,
absolutely not. There's no way that they can control it, and they shouldn't expect to control it. And that's kind of what I'm getting at. They can put the request out as a courtesy, would you please? But there's no way that you're going to block people from, the FTF hunt.
Well, and Omer Fam has a good example. They say, some football teams would really like to make it to the Super Bowl. So could the really good teams stop playing so well so that the other teams could make it to the Super Bowl? Same type of thing.
Yeah, definitely. I hear that one.
Well, if there's any other topics tonight, we'd love to hear them. Give us a call, 724-444-7444, and our top cast ID is 7525. If you're listening not live and you're listening to this as a recording, we'd love to, if you have any topics you'd like us to talk about, give us a call on our voicemail, 206-350-3GPS.
Yeah, we're seeing a lot of talk in the chat room about some other situations where people have had problems with government agencies. Yeah, and I do want to say that when you're dealing with someone like the Department of Transportation, their primary goal is keeping people safe. So when they see something like a power trail, their first reaction is probably going to be negative, because you've got people in close proximity to the road with people, potentially getting hit by trucks, cars, whatever. So I definitely understand where they're coming from that perspective, and why they're just right off the cuff going to be against it. So, you have to understand that this is their job, is to keep people safe, and you're potentially putting people in harm's way by hiding caches along the road. And yeah, they're not necessarily going to like it very much.
Yeah, you have to figure this is politics and legalities. And once it gets to a particular level and certain people are looking for it, if at best, hopefully it'll just quell down and quiet down over time, and it doesn't become a bigger issue than it is.
Yeah, and I think, it all comes back down to safety, like you said, Daryl, and just being cooperative too. Clay said that, they're not hurt, there's no bad feelings, but, everyone needs to be safe, safe, safe. So you guys, go ahead and remember that as we go out throughout this week, and just remember to be safe and placing and finding your geocaches. Thank you for subscribing to the Geocaching Podcast. If you find any value in the content of this podcast, please consider going to geocachingpodcast.com/support. Join us each Wednesday at 9:30 p.m. Eastern on the TalkShoe service. You can call in live at 724-444-7444. Our TalkCast ID is 7525. Our show notes and links to all of our past shows can be found at geocachingpodcast.com. You can call our voicemail, 206-350-3GPS, anytime to leave us a voicemail. Have a safe week and happy caching.